Our first reading comes from Psalm 71. Be to me a rock of refuge, a strong fortress to save me, for you are my rock and my fortress. Upon you I have leaned from my birth. It was you who took me from my mother's womb. My praise is continually of you. Here ends the reading.
And the second reading, the New Testament lesson, comes from 1 Corinthians 13. You may have heard this before, but I invite you to listen and see if you can hear it anew. The Apostle Paul wrote, "If I speak in tongues of mortals and of angels, but do not have love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have faith so as to move mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give away all my possessions, and if I hand over my body so that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. But as for prophecies, they will come to an end. As for tongues, they will cease. As for knowledge, it will come to an end. For we know only in part, and we prophesy only in part. But when the complete comes, the partial will come to an end. When I was a child, I spoke like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became an adult, I put an end to childish ways. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then we will see face to face. Now I know only in part, then I will know fully, even as I have been fully known. And now faith, hope, and love abide, these three, and the greatest of these is..." This is holy wisdom, holy word. I cannot read this passage without thinking of that scene from the movie Wedding Crashers. Anyone? So Wedding Crashers, if you didn't see it, it was this movie that starred Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn. And I can't believe I'm referencing this, but it's this movie about these two friends who routinely crash weddings in order to get dates at the reception. And they go to scores of weddings. They go to Christian weddings, Jewish weddings, non-religious weddings, Anglo, Asian, all the above, pretending to be other people. And they have these aliases. And it's a really messed up movie. But the scene I'm thinking of is when they crash the wedding of the family that they end up spending the rest of the plot with. And that's the Clearys. And they're sitting there in the church during the ceremony, and the priest announces, "Now, for the second reading, I'd like to invite the bride's sister Gloria up to the lectern." And Owen Wilson turns to Vince Vaughn and whispers, "$20, 1 Corinthians. And Vince Vaughn whispers back, double or nothing. Colossians 3:12. And the sister begins, and now a reading from Paul's letter to the Corinthians. And he hands him $20. And having done a lot of weddings, I kind of want to do that myself too. But we chose Colossians 3:12. It works for us. But one doesn't have to be an active worshiper in a church to have heard this passage from 1 Corinthians. This you might have heard it at a wedding. Just so we get this out of the way, for those of you who have been married or had a similar ceremony to weddings, who had 1 Corinthians 13? Okay, enough. Yes. I mean, so I thought about this week as I studied this passage, and it dawned on me how exceedingly unfair it is to read this to a couple who's about to begin a lifelong partnership. I mean, how high does that set the bar? I mean, imagine two people, men, women, whoever, whatever, of whatever gender, and they're about to begin their marriage, and they start in this nice matrimonial bliss. And they're in love, you know, that butterfly in your stomach's kind of love. And they're riding the good vibes from the wedding, and all is well until they have to, I don't know, pick out like a bathroom paint color or something. And boom! And my point is, it doesn't take long to falter from love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. Can you imagine beginning a partnership with it doesn't insist on its own way? I mean, reason number one, I think it's unfair to read this at weddings, is because it kind of sets a couple up for failure. I mean, true, it's wise to imbue a covenant like marriage with some high standards. I mean, it's a covenant after all, and you have to set the bar somewhere. But if you read this passage aloud and you really slow down and let the weight of Paul's words really sink in as you continue to read, it does not rejoice in wrongdoing, doesn't keep a record of wrongs, rejoices in the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. I mean, as I read that, I get the sense that this isn't really that attainable for one person, let alone two. I mean, reason number two that it's also unfair to read this at weddings, this was written to a church, to a whole community of people. The Apostle Paul penned this letter to this nascent church in the city of Corinth. This church, by the way, that was aflame with conflict. And we talked about this a little last week, but the divisions of the church at Corinth were tremendous. And as this professor in this podcast I listened to said, that this passage is actually best read in an angry tone. Because Paul is more like a parent ranting at misbehaving children than someone who's just sweetly cataloging the attributes of love. I mean, the Corinthians, they were pretty much divided along any line you could think of: preferred leader, cultural background, gender, social class. And Paul spilt all this ink trying to convince them that they were one in Christ. And we touched on this a little last week with 1 Corinthians 12, with the many members, one body passage. All these admonitions that Paul is giving are to an entire community, not to people. And that's why it's situated, this wonderful, almost poetic description of love, situated between two chapters that both mention the spiritual gifts in a community and how they ought to be used for the edification of the whole body, not the enrichment of individual members. He says, if I speak in tongues of mortals and of angels, but I don't have love, I'm just a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers, if I understand all mysteries and knowledge and have faith that moves mountains, but have love, I'm nothing. If I give away everything I have, but don't have love, I am nothing. If I hand over my body but don't have love, I gain nothing. In other words, I could be good at everything and anything under the sun, but if what I'm giving doesn't come from a place of love, these gifts are absolutely meaningless. Now, the word Paul uses here that is translated as love is agape. And you see, there are different words that people in Greek use for various kinds of love. Eros was one, you know, that passionate attraction love. Storge was another. It was a natural affection one might feel for a pet, like a dog. Phileo was another, kind of like friendship or some sort of association with affinity. And in some senses could mean joy or pleasure in a relationship. But agape is the word that Paul uses here. It's a word that the New Testament uses hundreds of times. And this kind of love, this particular kind of love, longs for the well-being of the beloved. It's love that is directed or willed by the nature of the lover, which means that it can remain even strong even when the beloved turns away. I think Dr. King described agape quite well when he said in a sermon, "The meaning of love is not to be confused with some sort of sentimental outpouring. Love is something much deeper than emotional bosh. Agape is an understanding and a creative goodwill for people. It's an overflowing love which seeks nothing in return. Agape is the love of God operating in the human heart. At this level, we love people not because we like them, nor because they appeal to us, nor even because they possess some sort of divine spark within them. We love every person because God loves them." That's even a taller order. I mean, in that light, just having to love one other person, that looks easy. You see, agape, the kind of love that Paul is talking about, draws this circle wider and wider and wider. It actually has no limit, and it expands our responsibility to our fellow human beings farther than the eye can see. I think, remembering what Cornel West said about justice, that justice is what love looks like in public. You see, Paul mentions agape in the context of spiritual gifts playing out with the congregation because agape love is other-centered. It's other-centered, and so it requires us, real, true, godlike love requires us to decenter ourselves. And it requires that really painful process of emptying ourselves of ego in whatever we're doing. So come to think of it, this passage really isn't fair to a community either. It's a high bar anywhere, really. What I mean is this, try applying verses 4-7 to yourself. Insert your name wherever it says love. It's like, for example, Bart is patient. Some of the office receptionists are like, no, he's not. Bart is patient. Bart is kind. Bart is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. Bart does not insist on his own way. Bart is not irritable or resentful. Bart does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. Bart bears all things. I'm just going to stop. But try thinking about that for yourself or for a community as a whole. How do we stack up? Or going even deeper, might the apostle say to us today, if I maintain the right opinions, if I vote for the right candidates, If I take the right position on all the right issues, but do not have love. If my resume is a mile long and it's got accomplishments that would make anyone proud, but I do not have love, or if my analysis of current events is the keenest, but I don't have love, or if I wear myself out for the sake of others and have done so my whole life, but don't do it out of love. So it seems impossible, yes? I mean, yes, it seems impossible, and yet what Paul does to the Corinthians, Paul does to us, and that is points us to Christ. Paul reminds us of what love embodied looks like. There is a standard, and the standard looks and acts and feels like us. The standard walks in our shoes. So it is, I think, Paul reminds us that love, too, is, it's a gift. Agape love is a gift. It's not something we can just muster on command. It's a gift to be received as well as given. And the giver of that gift is love. It's God's love that makes agape possible. So friends, know that you are loved and that we are called, indeed summoned, to a greater, wider, deeper love than we could ever imagine. And thanks be to God that that is possible.